Good morning, Harbor. I'm Cricket, the pastor of CARE here. And if you're like me, I'm partially deaf and can't always hear the words. The words are, you may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be a heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. That song came out in 1979 by Bob Dylan, and it was when he converted to Christianity, and he realized, you have to serve somebody. Every single one of us is created to worship and to serve. And you have to. There's a choice there. Someone might be chasing fame, money, substance abuse, any number of things. Put in there what you will. We will serve something, even if it's just our own comfort, connection with people, relationships, any number of things. Whatever is most important to us is what we will serve. It will rule us. We become a servant to it. And in the New Testament, there's a word for servant. It's called doulos, and it's used translated as both slave and servant. It's the same word. And we have to make sure that we don't put into that what we had here in America. They had a very different system over there. And in Leviticus, say it slower. Leviticus 25 shows some of the rules that God set up for the Israelites, for the Jewish people, so they wouldn't be abused and be treated harshly like they were when they were in Egypt. He put some protection, some boundaries in place for them so they wouldn't be treated as badly as the place we were here in the U.S. It was pretty bad. So there were two levels of servants, basically. You had the Jewish servants and you had the Gentiles. Gentiles were anybody who wasn't a Jew. Pretty basic. You're either Jew or you're not. And the Jewish ones were above the Gentile ones. They were treated better. They were not taken as, well, I can't think quite what the word, but they weren't as treated as poorly in some ways, because the Jewish ones had those protections. They were only allowed to be a servant for 7 years. Then if their system was working correctly, they had to be released. They could then put themselves back after that seventh year into service if they still needed money, and you could be put in because you were in debt. You could do it to yourself. You could do it to family members. Any number of reasons you could decide you wanted to be a servant in a household, and they would take you and they would care for you and feed you, but you were a servant. They were the master. You did what they said. You were under them. The thing about the Gentile servants, they were generally for life. If you were a Jewish servant, you could choose if you wanted to be made a servant for life. It was an option, but you didn't have to be. The Gentiles, no choice. They got you, they captured you in war, or wherever you came from, they put themselves under you. That was it. Life sentence. And these Jewish people, because they were above the Gentile ones, they couldn't be made or ordered to do the disgusting jobs, the really lowly, icky jobs, like washing somebody's feet when they came into the house. They couldn't be ordered to do that. Was not going to happen. That stinky, disgusting thing was left for the Gentile servants. That was their job. And the Gentile servants didn't have a choice in that. Their life was not their own. It belonged to their master. They had to listen to what they said and either do it or face the consequences. Why do you care? Why do we need to know this today? Because there's a phrase at the beginning of a lot of the New Testament letters that says, I am servant of God, servant of Jesus, servant of Christ Jesus. And you see it one after another after another. It's their identity as those who have chosen to follow God, who have chosen to be Jesus followers. They call themselves servants of Christ. And it's that same word, doulos, which is servant or slave. And that's their identity. Believers in the early church had the identity as being a servant of Jesus. So what does that look like? How do we serve? Who do we serve? And why do we need to hear this? You're getting it because I need to hear it. It's something I need on a regular basis because my heart is pretty stinky, just like their feet in those days where they walked through muddy streets and dusty feet because they were dusty feet. Dusty streets. They get dirty. They get caked on with all this stuff, and it just feels grimy and disgusting. And my heart gets that way. And I'm guessing a few of your hearts do as well. So we need to remind ourselves and remember, oh yeah, Jesus is the boss of me. I'm not the boss of me. He has things he wants to say to me, things he wants me to do, in spite of my heart being stinky. So I want to start looking at this from Mark 10. How do we live this out today? And this is before they went up to Palm Sunday. They're walking on the road to Jerusalem there, dusty, dry road at this point, and they're talking among themselves, which was a little rude because Jesus was there leading them, teaching them on the road, and they're just kind of doing their own little thing. And he's telling them what's going to happen. It's a very disturbing incident that happens here because he's told them a number of times before this that you are servants. The one who wants to be the greatest has to be the least, all that kind of stuff. And they're still not getting it. He ends up having to tell them yet again because while he's trying to teach them, and he's trying to teach them that he would be delivered to the chief priests, they would condemn him to death. They would hand him over to the Gentiles. They would mock him, spit on him, scourge him, and kill him. And then in 3 days, he would rise again. And they're not listening. And that's, servanthood 101, discipleship 101 is listen to your leader, your teacher, your master. And they're not listening. They're doing other stuff. You'd think that they'd say, oh my goodness, this is going to happen to you? How can we help? What can we do? Or, wow, you're the suffering servant. I can see this from the scriptures. They're being fulfilled in you. Is that what you're saying to us? Wow. We're here for you. We're gonna be with you. When a teacher, rabbi would speak, the disciples of him would interact. These guys aren't because they're not listening. What are they doing? Why were they failing? Well, that's the fun part. Not. It starts in Mark 10, 35, where James and John, the sons of thunder, the two sons of Zebedee, come up to Jesus saying, Teacher, we want you to do what for us whatever we ask of you. They hadn't heard what Jesus was saying because they were focused on themselves, on what they wanted, getting ahead, getting power, becoming great, and beating out the other 10. Ha! Serves them right. So instead of responding to him and being concerned about him, they want him to agree to something without telling him what it is. It's like, oh my goodness. It's not even, would you do me a favor? It's, here, write me a blank check, please. You own everything. Write me a blank check. We want you to do something for us. We're not going to tell you what it is. It's like, man, I know this well because I used to be a manipulator. So I can spot it. It's like, man, they are so manipulative. I would have just said, fat chance, no way. Get out of my face. No, not going to happen. But because that's not how servanthood works. It's not about what they want. They can ask, they can request, but not say, hey, give us a blank check. They call him teacher, they call him master, but they're trying to call the shots. They're trying to be the boss. It shows how human we can really be, even after following Jesus for years. They had been with him day and night for 3 years, seeing him do miracles, heal lepers, raise people from the dead. And he had even let them do some of this. He had sent them off to cities and said, go and do the spirits, you know, clean people from the spirits, heal them, do these miracles, and then I'm going to come along and speak to the people. They had done this. They'd been part of it. And yet here they are saying, give it to us. Come on, we want this. Whatever it is, we want this. And, you know, instead of saying, you know better, don't manipulate me, Jesus is so much nicer. He says, what do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, grant that we can sit on your right hand and on your left in your glory. You know, it's that minor little thing. Yeah, that tells us their heart attitude. It's like, oh my goodness, that's not humble. That is not the heart of a servant. They're trying to raise themselves up, being prideful. They're not loving their neighbor as themselves. They're trying to elbow them out of the way and get the best spot. That is definitely not what a servant is. So no wonder they didn't tell Jesus first. That, you know, they're like little kids trying to outsmart the babysitter when they know they shouldn't be. It's something they want, but, you know, maybe they can get away with it. It's like kind of like that. You know, it's not allowed really, but let's at least try for it. But Jesus has healthy boundaries. He's not fooled by them. He knows their hearts. He's not going to let them bully him into it. He's not going to let them take advantage of the situation. So even though he could, potentially, because we've seen him do these miracles, we've seen all the amazing things that God has allowed him to do, but this is God in human flesh. He's come as a human. Jesus has put himself, just like the Jewish slaves, he's put himself as a Gentile, essentially, under God. So he's letting God call the shots. He has to check with God, can we do this or not? So Jesus is a servant himself. So he can't just write that blank check. And we see how he answers. He doesn't yell at them. He doesn't roll his eyes, probably. I would, but he didn't. He says, you do not know what you are asking. And a few verses later in 40 to 45, he says, to sit on my right hand or on my left, this is not mine to give, but for those to whom it has been prepared. Hearing this, the ten are now listening. They hear this, and they feel indignant with James and John. Do you notice how Jesus takes time to explain it? He doesn't brush them off. He patiently, lovingly listens and explains. And he shows them that there are boundaries, that that's not something he can do. He's not in charge of the seating arrangements. He had to check with God, and nope, not going to happen. This attempted manipulation by these two causes a division. It causes a break in the relationship within this group, which is not good. They'd argued earlier about who was going to be the greatest, but it was them. And when Jesus had asked them, what are you talking about? They all just kind of, you know, whistling, kind of, no, nothing, not much, uh-uh. This time, though, you get two of them who are separating themselves above the others, trying to outdo them, trying to one-up them, essentially, to get that better place. So it's caused a division, which causes hurt and anger and rivalry and envy, because someone else is getting ahead. Is that what a servant is? No. So that leaves the question, what are we as servants of God to be like? Jesus explains it to him. He calls the 12 and works to heal this split, this division that's been created by their demand, and begins to tell them this contrast of what a servant of God is like versus those who are in the world, the Gentiles. And he says in verses 42 to 45, calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, you know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But this is not the way among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be the servant of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. This is God's upside-down kingdom. In the world, the great ones, the leaders, they exercise authority over others. In other words, they dominate, they control, they order, they have power. Everyone under them does what they say, or else. So you have these domineering people ordering others to do their will. They tend to be power-hungry, status-seeking, and in this day, often cruel. There are horror stories of some of the things that these leaders did. I'm not going to do it because it's so gruesome. But so, it seems like the more people they ruled over, the greater they thought they were, and the more they wanted people to control. They wanted more armies so they could take more territory and have more people and more resources. More under their control. More, more, more. That's what they're after in the world. And Jesus explains how God's way is totally different. If you want to rule, you're a servant. Greatness in the kingdom of God is upside down. It's serving others. The question is not, what can I get? What can I take? What can I extract from others? But it's, what service can I give? What can I do? How can I help in a healthy way, in a way that will help you to grow and be better and know God more? Rulers in God's kingdom serve those in their care. It's not about themselves. It's not about getting ahead. It's loving others through humble acts of service, of giving, of caring. And we saw Jesus do that with giving his life in our place, exchanging it. And we're talking about the Son of the living God here, the one who created the universe, the galaxy, the stars, the heavens, the earth, all of it. The power of God wrapped up in human flesh. He did not come to control. He did not come to dominate. He did not come for more, more, more. He came to give, to serve, to free us from the cost of sin, from the chains that bind us and pull us down and try to destroy us. He came to love, to serve, and to save us. We are his. If we have given our life to him, we are his. And we see how gentle he is here, how loving, and his heart attitude is one of, I want what's best for you. You may not know what that is, but I want what's best for you. That's what it looks like. It's upside down. It's, you know, humbleness. It's love. It's service. What does that look like in practicality for us today? If we turn to the Gospel of John chapter 13, we see how Jesus gave an example of it. The events here happen after Palm Sunday, after he has come into Jerusalem as a king, not as a conquering king. A conquering king would have come in on a horse. He came in as a serving king, as one who comes in peace. That's how he entered Jerusalem. And the people were praising him and loving him and just shouting out thanks to God, taking the branches down, laying them before him, taking their coats off and putting them on the ground for him, just like they would a king who came to visit. So we're a couple days out from that, and the 12 have gathered for the Passover feast. The Last Supper is what we call it. And they've gone to a second story floor, which they usually came up from an outdoor staircase so they wouldn't disturb the people who owned it, because they would let rooms out. So they're going to have their feast there, and they walk through dirty, dusty streets that would be kicking up. Think of Pig Pen, you know, all the dust and dirt that comes up when you see him walk. That's what it would be like as they go through the streets. And as people go by, it kicks up all the dust during the dry season. During the rainy season, they'd be walking through sloppy mud that would be sucking at their feet, covering their ankles. And the sandals they wore wouldn't do much for that kind of a mess. Not very good for that. So most homes would have a basin by the door and a water jug and a towel. And when you went in, if you were a guest, there would be a servant, and this is why I brought up servants partly before, because only the Gentile servants, if they had them, were the ones who would pour the water, clean the feet, and towel them off. So you'd have clean feet walking from the door to wherever you were going in the house and not leave this trail of dust and mud and caked on stuff, ugh, that was left in the street by animals as well as people. So they would do that. And often, it would be the disciples of a rabbi, like Jesus was a rabbi here for the 12 apostles as well as the disciples. Often they are the ones that would be washing his feet. That was a service they would do for them. Not this night. Nope, not happening. They enter the upper room. They've got dirty feet. They all walk by the basin and the towel and the water. They're not doing that, because you know what? What if I do it this time? They may want me to do it every time. I'm not going to be the servant. They're not the boss of me. I'm not doing that for them. Huh, no way, and you can't make me. You know, you wonder, do they pretend not to see it as they went through, talking to the guy beside them? Or, you know, maybe they're too busy trying to rush to get the best seat because James and John might beat them to it. You never know. Whatever the case was, they go to the couches and they sat on these long couches and reclined while leaning on their elbow and eating. And the next guy would be right beside them. And the next beside, so somebody's smelling their dirty feet. It's not good. And they don't seem to care. They just start eating. And Jesus himself did the same. He took his seat. They started the meal. And if they had had mud on their feet, it would start flaking off onto the couch. Jesus gave them time. They started to eat. Did they actually get what he had said numerous times? And he waits. And they eat some more. And nobody moves to get up. So Jesus, demonstrating to them what servanthood is in action, as their teacher, as the Son of God, gets up and gives them a living parable. He's not just going to tell them this time. He's going to show them. And it starts in John 13, verses 3 through 5. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper, laid aside his garments, taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. This is the Son of God doing what none of the apostles would lower themselves to do. Not a one of them. He took on the duty, not only of a servant, but the lowest of servants. The lowest. Grossest job, and he's doing it. Can you picture the apostles while he's doing this with their mouths hanging open? What is he doing? Because he'd have to take off his outer garment, the seamless one that the Romans had, will later cast lots for. He had to take that off. So he's in a long undershirt sort of thing that the servants would use and wear when they were serving meals. And he takes the towel and he ties it around his waist. And Peter, of course, had to protest because Peter's Peter. And His protest opens up another whole thing that we can talk about another time, not today. But what it does show us is that it was not normal for the master to do this. No one who is above somebody else would wash their feet. Not going to happen. And yet you get God in human flesh doing that, being that servant that he had told them about earlier. When they were vying on who was going to get the best seat, he's showing it to them. And in case they still didn't get it, if the lesson didn't stick, he's telling them again. After he's done it, he tells them and explains it again in verses 12 to 17. So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined again, he said to them, "Do you know what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If then the Lord and the teacher washed your feet, then you ought to wash the feet of one another. For I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than the master, nor is the one who sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." He showed them, humbled himself to show them what it was like to be a servant, what it was like to be the upside down leader in God's kingdom. Jesus wasn't too great, too important, too mighty to stoop and do the dirty jobs. Could you see him today? What would he be doing since we don't have foot washing? I could see him cleaning toilets, pulling someone's hair back while they had to throw up, cleaning it up for them. I can see him doing the things that nobody else wants to do. You know, holding a person while they're going through the shakes. Jesus is there with everything we go through. He showed them love in action. And since we don't have foot washing today, those are some of the things we can do, some of the little things we can do. We can listen as his disciples were supposed to listen. When someone comes, as we're like yesterday, you know, someone comes to the mailbox while you're doing something and starts talking and saying, "This is what happened in my life." And you can say, "I'm sorry. That's really hard. I can pray for you if you'd like." We can just little things. It doesn't have to be something big. I'll pray for you. Send a card. Go for a walk with them. Any number of things. Fix a computer. There's all kinds of things we can do to show love and service and humility to others, that we care about them. And it's about our heart attitude. We don't want to have the heart that I can imagine James and John, you know, if they were doing the foot washing then, they would have been harumphing and slamming things down and chucking people's feet in there, sloshing water all over the place, taking the towel and rubbing their feet raw. That's not the heart attitude. The heart attitude is one of, "How can I help you?" Not, "I have to do this for you." That's not what he wants us to do. He wants us to have that humility, that love, that care, that "let me give." Not "what can I get?" What can I give? How can I give? Because everyone would have known James and John were not happy about doing what they did. You don't want that to be the heart attitude. You want to know them to know that you care about them and that it's God doing it. Because we can't do this stuff without letting God work in us. Without saying, "Guess what I did today?" You know, we don't want to be prideful and boastful. We want to just serve quietly, lovingly, the way Jesus did. And who do we serve? We look at who Jesus did this for. He did it for Judas, knowing Judas was going to betray him in a very short amount of time. He washed the feet of Peter, knowing that Peter was going to deny him three times. Say, "I don't know you." "Not me. Nope. I don't know." And he washed the feet of the others who are going to run away from him, abandon him, and leave him alone. There are people in our lives that we need to wash the feet of in loving service, in the ways that we can, that we've been gifted in, that we find joy in as well as the ones that we don't. At times when we do the stinky jobs, we do the things that are hard. We got to serve somebody. We're going to serve ourselves, or are we going to serve Jesus and serve others the way that he did? Is there someone whose feet you think you are too good to serve, to wash, to do that for them? Someone that you think you're more important than, that you're not going to do that for them? Or you're too right and they're wrong and you're not going to stoop to do that for them? Has God put somebody on your heart already about who you can be a servant to this afternoon or tomorrow or this week? Let him guide you. Listen. Let him speak to your heart. Whose feet are we willing to wash? Whose feet do we not want to wash? Is it someone in your family? Cashier at the store who just messed up your order royally? Your boss who's yelling and mean? Your neighbor who's obnoxious? Judas. Who is your Judas? Do you want to wash his feet? What about some leader in the church who's done damage, who's hurt you? Do you want to wash their feet? Will you wash their feet? What about someone in your family who is so distracted all the time that they don't care? They don't seem to care. They're too busy. They don't have the time for you and have hurt your heart. Can you wash their feet? And I'm going the political route. Sorry, we're going there. Just briefly. What about President Biden? Or former President Trump? Are you willing to wash the feet of people that you don't care for? As the band comes up and plays while we do communion, I'd like you to talk to God and listen to him. Ask him if there's someone. Ask him where your heart is and to change it and to make it like his, to break your heart for the things that break his. And as we take communion, as we take his body that was broken for us and the representation in the cup of his blood poured out for us for the forgiveness of our sins, the things we have done against him and against each other. Ask him to forgive us because he is faithful and just, and he will forgive us as we ask. Please bow your hearts and your heads as we ask him to guide us. God, we need you. Our hearts don't want to bow to others. Too often we want to be served rather than to serve others. We need you to show us where our hearts need work, where we need transformation, that only spending time with you can do. Forgive us for wanting our own ways, for thinking we're better than so-and-so. You know, we've tried things on our own, and a lot of times it doesn't go well. Help us to be more open to you, to let you cut out the rotting parts in our life. Clean us. Wash us. Make us new. We love you, and we are so grateful you love us so much more than we can ever love you. Thank you for everything, Lord. Amen.